This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on 15th of June 2015 on Monocle 24.
Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. Today I'm joined by Fison Guna, Visual Arts Editor at the Arts Desk. On our radar this week is an exhibition of Philip Guston's finest paintings and drawings at Timothy Taylor Gallery and the first major retrospective of abstract artist Agnes Martin at the Tate Modern. Plus we'll talk about Verses After Dusk, a new collection of work by Turner-nominated painter Lynette Iodombwakier and Dwayne Hanson's lifelike sculptures, both of which are currently on show at the Serpentine Galleries. That's all coming up here on the Monocle Arts Review on Monocle 24. Welcome to the show, Fison. Fresh from the wilds of Western Norway. It's a bit brisker in London today, though, isn't it?
Today, we're all right. It's pleasantly warm.
We can handle it. And as we've talked about in our introduction, it's hot in art terms as well. Where are we going first?
First, I think we should visit Philip Guston. I've just hot-footed it from Timothy Taylor Gallery, and he's got a selection of paintings at Timothy Taylor. And if anyone doesn't know Guston, I'll briefly
let's fill them in. We can do a bit of York notes on Philip Guston. People know they're often large canvases. They're sort of slightly cartoonish. They're abstract.
Very cartoonish. He's a Canadian artist who lived in. He was an abstract expressionist of the New York school, a contemporary of Pollock's, and he achieved a great deal of success as an abstract expressionist painter. And then he became very disillusioned with abstraction. I mean, this was the late 50s, the early 60s. He looked around him. America seemed in big trouble. There were a lot of racial inequalities. He saw the rise of Nixon. He looked on it with despair and horror. And he started questioning the point of abstraction. He thought that he couldn't really carry on with this kind of inward-looking artistic practice, so he began to paint figuratively. And his paintings are very graphic in style, very cartoonish. He worked with certain motifs such as the Ku Klux Klansman, these kind of potato-headed...
They look a bit like sort of like The Simpsons were to do Ku Klux Klan. There's a funny quality.
Yeah, they're kind of straddling the ridiculous. And there's something, I mean, the paintings which are full of pathos, but also very, very cartoonish. And when he first showed them, you know, when he moved away from abstraction, which was the visual language of American painting at that time, it was the language of modernity. So it was almost quite shocking that he left all that behind after attaining considerable success and just completely changed direction. And when he first showed these paintings, you know, he got a real critical baiting, which left him very hurt. And so he kind of retreated into himself a bit. But anyway, Timothy Taylor Show is the first exhibition in the UK since, oh gosh, he had a major retrospective, I think it's almost a decade ago or probably longer. So if people are familiar with his name but are not familiar with his work, do go to the Timothy Taylor Gallery because they're very powerful paintings exploring, well, there are some Klan paintings, these Ku Klux Klan paintings. There's one particular impressive painting, which is a large canvas depicting this enormous head. I mean, some suggest it's a self-portrait, this enormous sort of potato head with the cyclops eye, and is looking down at a bottle, and it's just called a wine bottle, and his the painting is simply called Head and Bottle. And he just used these very simple motifs to produce very powerful work, which are kind of quite angsty and existential.
Yeah, and we see a lot of Philip Guston at, you know, art fairs. I mean, he's, you know, Timothy Taylor is obviously a big dealer. Yeah. These are big paintings. He's a big name. I wonder what people's relationship with Philip Guston's work is. Is he an artist that is easy to read? Is he the kind of artist that people, that Tim Taylor will need to, you know, massage the potential buyer a little bit? Do you see, with Basel coming up next week, do you see that at that point there's a little bit of explaining needs to be done of the work of Philip Guston?
Well, I mean, it's safe to say that Guston is probably the most significant figurative, post-war American figurative painter. I mean, for art collectors, I mean, he'll need no introduction. He really is a significant and influential figure. I mean, one of the first artists to go back into figurative painting after, you know, the abstract expressionists. And he really is a figure who's really up there as an important American painter.
Cool. Well, we're going to have to leave Philip Guston there, but that's for Philip Guston at Tim Taylor Gallery on Carlos Place in London. That's a nice place to show those works as well. There's a lot of space, a lot of like natural light in those galleries as well.
It's a lovely space and it's a lovely display. I really recommend that one, actually.
Perfect. So we're going to now check out Agnes Martin at Tate Modern. Is this is a retrospective, presumably. This is another, we're again in the realm of abstraction here, aren't we?
Yeah, this one is a major survey. She's very little known in this country. Not surprisingly, although she's an important art world figure, she's not had, as far as in my lifetime, I think she hasn't had a major retrospective in a public gallery. I'm familiar with her work, but really, in the UK, there has been almost nothing. So most people have encountered her in books and perhaps smaller collections. So this really is exciting to have her finally given a big show at last, posthumous show. She's another Canadian who lived in America, I mean, like Guston, and an exact contemporary of Guston's, but she couldn't be more different. Her canvases are very pared down, very minimalist, very rigorous, and she paints grids and stripes. And if you describe her work, you think, well, what else is going on? What, you know, there doesn't seem to be enough really to excite people. But the Tate Hang is so rich. I mean, she lived a long time. She was born in 1913. She died in 2004, and she continued working up to the last. There are paintings that she painted in the last year of her life. And it shows a very rich and varied career, a surprisingly rich and varied career, considering how pared down and minimalist her paintings are. She worked with all sorts of different materials, as well as on canvas. She was influenced by all sorts of other artists. You could see Rauschenberg and Jasper Johns in a lot of her early work.
And is she a bit of a risky show for the Tate? Is this them putting some sort of intellectual muscle where their mouth is?
It's not a typical blockbuster, because she's not a name that is familiar with. I mean, she's an art world secret, in effect, but people may be surprised at how rich and subtle and gorgeous her paintings actually are, considering how pared down they are. When I was going round looking at them myself, I was surprised at how seductive her paintings are. And I did think of the Japanese artist Yayo Kusama. And on the face of it, you think, two more different artists you couldn't imagine. You know, Kusama's famous for her mad kind of psychedelic dots and her infinity rooms, and they're a bit trippy. And Agnes Martin isn't like that, but they do have something in common. They have this kind of obsession going on. Martin suffered from mental problems. She was diagnosed with schizophrenia. I think she was in her 30s. And you see this, I mean, I don't know how influential that is, but you can see this kind of very, like Kasuma, you can see this obsessive, intricate mark-making, which is very much like the dots, these obsessive dots that Kusama painted. But you really have to go right up to the canvas to see them and see how intricate and layered and subtle her painting is.
So that's a discovery then. That is a voyage of discovery. That's Agnes Martin at Tate Modern. Do not be afraid to get up close.
I think you should,
inspect the brushwork, inspect the work at hand. And an interesting one there, you said that she suffered from schizophrenia.
Yes.
There's a way of perhaps controlling the paint on the canvas as a way of controlling things in her life as well. You see that with artists.
Yeah, well, she was influenced by things, by Zen Buddhism and East Asian philosophies. And that also comes across in this very detailed, obsessive brushwork. So all those things are brought into play in her work.
And we're going to go to the Serpentine Galleries now. This is a show from Lynette Yedden-Boikier and Dwayne Hansen. Faison, one well-known name here, one perhaps slightly less well-known name. Talk us through this dual show at the Serpentine.
Yeah, it's two solo shows, but taking place in the old Serpentine Gallery, the one that everybody knows, and Lynette Yedden-Boikier. is at the New Sackler Galleries. So they're two separate shows, but they kind of overlap in terms of themes. And
there's a lot of people in their work, aren't there?
They're both representational artists. Dwayne Hanson, and I'm not even sure how well known he is these days, actually, but he was very big in his day. I mean, he died in 96, but he was very big as a kind of post-pop artist, really. He made these startlingly lifelike resin casts of people, basically janitors, just ordinary people that he encountered. They're not portraits, but that he encountered in his hometown in Florida, which is where he lived. So
also
just
rare that
ordinary
an artist works and lives out of Florida. Is it considered,
yes,
sort of, other than the art fair that touches down, it is sort of considered a bit of a desert?
I'm trying to think of another artist who moved off and lived in Florida. But anyway, he depicted the people he encountered every day in Florida, his hometown, and they're hyper-realistic. In fact, other artists today are doing similar things. Paul McCarthy, for instance, has done very, very lifelike work. And the technology is now such that figurative, you know, those representational sculptures have become so lifelike that the impact has slightly lessened with Dwayne Hanson. Because, I mean, there are other artists.
Ron Muick, I suppose, Maurizio Catalan.
Startlingly lifelike. Yeah. So other artists have surpassed him in the hyper-realism stakes. But at the
time,
are
they sort of time capsules of their time? Is that almost a nice thing, that they were supposed to be very much of the present or even slightly of the future, but now they are almost time capsules of,
yes,
what a janitor looked like in the 70s in Florida?
Yes, yes,
that's kind of,
yes,
there's something about,
yes,
that. Right.
Yes, they were wearing these kind of slacks and, you know, these Hawaiian sort of polyester shirts. And he was concerned, he was quite a socially conscientious artist, and he was concerned with depicting the kind of lower middle class, working class person that he felt kind of socially sympathetic to. But when I was actually, and this may be something to do with a kind of British attitude, but I always, when I was much younger, I always thought they were satirical. He was kind of being gently mocking, you know, with these very large women with their big skirts, and I always thought there was something satirical about them.
Their big skirts.
I was always thought, but actually encountering them anew and reading more about him, that wasn't his intention at all. So to me, the intention, what he intended and how I have often read them has kind of jarred a bit. But anyway, yeah, this, it's not really a full retrospective at the Serpentine. It's got about just over half a dozen of his works. And you see that displayed in the way that the Serpentine have displayed it, you see that kind of sympathy coming across.
Because that's presumably it's an interesting thing, the way these works are hung, they're not done in an arch way, if they're not arch sculptures, but you have to show some of his responsibility, that his empathy and care for the
they're
characters which he depicted.
They're much more empathetic than,
yeah,
I originally remember from looking at them isolated in books.
We're going to have to move on to Lynette now, I think. We're going to have a quick one on, maybe you can introduce our listeners to Lynette Yodin-Boisquier. She's in the Sackler wing of the Serpentine. Maybe you can fill us in quickly on,
sure,
her work.
I think this is a great show. I'd highly recommend it. She's the youngest artist by far and the only that I've mentioned. And she's the only British artist. She was nominated for the Turner Prize in 2013. Many gallery goers probably didn't get a chance to see it because that was the year that the Turner Prize moved up to Derry in Northern Ireland. But she paints portraits. She didn't win it, by the way. I thought she should have won it, but unfortunately she didn't. Yeah, she paints portraits, quite large portraits, but they're not sort of, they're not portraits of people, they're imagined characters. She's a storyteller, and that comes across very strongly
in her
work.
And that's surprising when you see these paintings, they seem like portraiture.
They absolutely, yeah, seem like portraits, and she paints them in a day. All her references are kind of old master references. You see Goya in there, you see a 19th century painter like the portrait painter John Singer Sargent. You know, she directly references these painters in her work as if they're traditional portraits, but one, they're not traditional portraits because very few old master painters painted black characters as she does exclusively. So you could say there's also, she introduces perhaps a political element into the work because she deviates from the norms of portraiture to paint what she obviously knows. And she creates, taken singly, they're not that powerful in themselves because they're quite traditional paintings. They look quite traditional, but in a room full and in, taken en masse, I mean, the way she tells stories through her paintings, it's quite powerful. It's
so there's sort of a narrative. Is it a narrative builds up, or more the power of...
More a sense of mood, a tone. Right, yeah. Not a narrative that runs all the way through the paintings, but I got a sense there's a kind of disquieting mood to these paintings that I couldn't quite put my finger on, but they are quite powerful. They do exert a kind of force, and I possibly it's because of the way the characters are sitting, the way they stare at us, their direct gaze. There's an accumulative effect to her paintings, which make them very powerful.
Perfect. Well, how beautifully put. That is Lynette Yedembwakier. She's at the Serpentine, as is Dwayne Hanson. Before that, we talked about Agnes Martin, big retrospective show at Tate Modern. And we started off with Philip Guston at the Timothy Taylor Gallery. Faisal Guna, thank you very much for talking us through London's art hits of the next few weeks or so, I should imagine. This has been the Monocle Arts Review. I've been Robert Bowne. My producer was Holly Fisher. Thank you very much for tuning in.